You're listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee here in the liberal land of long beards, lattes, and lutefisk. And now here are your hosts, Doug Padgett, Brett Johnson, and Hunter Hawes.
Well, it's just a one-man repartee today on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. I'm not even sure if that actually means it's a repartee if it's just one person. I guess unless I repartee with myself. Well, it's Brett Johnson in hosting your 4 p.m. hour today. Had a couple of people that needed the day off, so you're just stuck with me on a one-man show. But we have some great content lined up for you. By the way, this is going to be the only live segment of the show. The rest of it's going to be pre-recorded once we hit about 4:15, but we have a couple of great interviews lined up that I'm sure you're going to enjoy. Coming up during the second and third segments, we're going to be speaking with Sam Berger of the Center for American Progress, as we're going to get into a policy discussion about the citizenship question that's going to possibly make its way onto the census depending on what happens in the courts. Of course, the Supreme Court already ruled that, well, the Trump administration didn't have a good enough reason to put it on, so they got to come back and try again. Now, Trump is also threatening to put that question on the census via executive order. We're going to talk more with Sam about that in segment two. Then segment three, we'll continue our conversation with Sam as we'll talk more about gerrymandering and what Democrats are doing to fight in 2020 and beyond when gerrymandering will again become an issue. And there's some interesting scenarios that are going to play out around the country. And we're going to talk more about what's going to possibly happen in Wisconsin, where, if you remember, that's one of the most gerrymandered states in the entire country. And that was because after the 2010 elections, they, of course, had Scott Walker and a very Republican legislature. But what's going to happen after 2020, Wisconsin will probably still have a very Republican legislature, but they will have a Democratic governor in Tony Evers who could potentially veto their gerrymandered maps. And we'll talk about what will happen in that state, among others, that will also have no longer Republican trifectas that allow gerrymandering in the first place. They're going to go to these state Supreme Courts, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens. We'll talk more with Sam about that later on. Then in the last segment, we're going to give you a little preview of Ellie 2.0 and her show that's going to be airing next Monday. She spoke with, you may recognize this name as he's been in the news recently, Reverend Dan Collison of First Covenant Church in Minneapolis. Dan and his church have been in the news because they were actually defrocked by the Evangelical Covenant Church because of their stances on being very pro-LGBTQ issues. We're going to play just an excerpt of that interview during our last segment here on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee, and you can hear Ellie's entire conversation with Reverend Dan coming up next Monday at 7 a.m. on Ellie 2.0 Radio. So before we get to all those interviews, just want to go through a couple of news items that made the headlines over the past few days. And first up, I want to talk about what Matt was speaking about during the last hour, and that is this idea of what is Nancy Pelosi doing? Why is she not impeaching Donald Trump? Why is she not going after him? Why is she basically not holding Republicans and specifically Donald Trump accountable? And I think one of the reasons we hear, at least I've often heard this argument from some of the Democrats who support Nancy Pelosi's stance on these types of issues, is that, well, look at what happened to the Republicans in 1998 when they tried to impeach Bill Clinton. And it's a fair argument on the surface, because if you look at what happened in 1998, the Republicans did not do well in those midterm elections. But I've brought this up before. They also forget what happened in 1974. Those were the midterm elections after Democrats impeached Richard Nixon. After that 1974 election, Democrats actually gained 39 seats in the House. So from a purely political reasoning, saying, well, you shouldn't impeach Trump because it'll help Republicans, while that's true, it hurt Republicans in 1998. It actually helped Democrats back in 1974 when they impeached Richard Nixon. They went on to gain 39 seats, so they certainly were not hurt at all. And then, of course, you have the fact that Richard Nixon's offenses were far, far worse than any offenses committed by Bill Clinton. All right, one more local story to touch on, and this one kind of brings a smile to my face. Jason Lewis is gaining more and more momentum in terms of trying to challenge Senator Tina Smith for the 2020 election here in Minnesota. That's the only statewide election we have on the ballot, by the way, in 2020, as we don't have a governorship or any of the constitutional offices up. He's been gaining more and more momentum, and I didn't know this, but apparently last Friday, he actually filled in for Rush Limbaugh on his radio show, and he spent a lot of time, apparently, during that show. I didn't listen to it myself, by the way. This is just a secondhand report, but apparently, according to Blois Olson over at The Morning Take, he spent quite a bit of that show going after Tina Smith, so maybe he's foreshadowing a possible campaign against Senator Smith in 2020. Oh, I can only hope so. And of course, the base, very much supportive of that as well. There's a right-wing Facebook page I occasionally check in on, and they actually put up a poll asking their likers of their page, whatever term you want to use, people who like their page, who do you think should challenge Tina Smith in 2020? This is a right-wing page. They had among their choices Jason Lewis, Kurt Dowd, among others, and Jason Lewis won that vote overwhelmingly. Of course, that's just a local right-wing Facebook page, but shows that they really like him, and maybe he will end up running against Tina Smith in 2020. Oh, I hope that happens. He would certainly stand no chance. And by the way, when he did fill in for Rush Limbaugh on Friday, hopefully that show was recorded in case he said anything bad that, well, we can use against him in the 2020 campaign. Of course, we still have access to those radio archives that he had back when he was on another radio station prior to being in Congress, when a lot of those clips were used against him when he was running against Angie Craig. Well, coming up next on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee, we're going to get to our interview with Sam Berger of the Center for American Progress. We're going to be talking about democracy reform, the citizenship question on the census, as well as gerrymandering. That's all on the way next on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee.
Hi, Minnesota. It's Tom Hartman, and you're listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
This is Chad, owner of AM 950, here to tell you about Snap Construction. They're experts in roofing, siding, window, and insurance restoration. They have energy-efficient products available for both residential and commercial properties. This spring, when we needed a company to take a look at a problem with our roof, I called the company I knew I could trust, Snap Construction. I've known Ryan, the owner at Snap Construction, for years, so I knew I could trust him. Don't just take my word for it. Check out their reviews online. They are arguably the most well-reviewed exterior contractor online in the metro area. Over the years, Ryan has always said the same thing to me about his work. If we build it, shouldn't we be held accountable for the work indefinitely? He backed that statement up years ago when Snap Construction was a pioneer in offering a lifetime craftsmanship guarantee on all their work. For a free estimate or general questions, call the locally owned company AM950 Trusts Snap Construction at 612-333-SNAP. That's 612-333-SNAP, or find them online at snapconstruction.com. They have financing options available.
Native Roots Radio is proud to announce we've added an extra hour.
Yeah, Chushke, 1 hour goes by too fast.
That's right, Uncle Curtis.
I'll have extra time to share important information about our sacred animals.
And report national and native news from all over the country and Canada.
This new hour is sponsored by Robbins Kaplan LLP, dedicated to redefining excellence for high-stakes litigation representation in Indian country.
We are awake.
It's Greek to Me is now open from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Tuesday through Sunday. Be sure to join them for lunch. With warmer weather upon us, their magnificent Grecian patio is open. It's Greek to Me is located on the corner of Lake and Lindale at 626 West Lake Street in Minneapolis, or at its GreekToMeMN.com. In addition to free side street parking, there is metered cross-street parking and a toll lot behind the restaurant along Garfield Avenue, as well as the Dulano's parking lot on Lake Street in Garfield.
Hey, Minnesota, it's your favorite sexy liberal here, Stephanie Miller. Join Mama every weekday morning at 8 a.m. as we chide the unintentional comedians known as the right-wing Republicans. They certainly provide plenty of material. Laugh along with us on The Stephanie Miller Show. Weekday mornings from 8 to 11 on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Online at am950radio.com.
Tom Hartman here for All Energy Solar. One of the myths about solar is that you save more if you wait, but waiting to switch can actually cost you more. While tax rebates make solar affordable, those rebates are often limited and decrease over time. So when you wait, you risk losing some of the incentives that make solar so easy to afford today. And besides, the sooner you get your All Energy Solar system, the sooner you reduce or even eliminate that high electricity bill. Make the switch today at allenergysolar.com.
Have you tuned in to Mission Accomplishers yet? Saturdays at 7 p.m., hosted by the fellas, Hunter Hawes and Eric Nelson. You don't want to miss out, so subscribe on your podcast app of choice, Apple, Google, Stitcher. We release extended editions of the show, talks, interviews that you can only find via podcast. Pull up Apple Podcasts now, type in Mission Accomplishers, subscribe, rate us, and give feedback, and we'll read your feedback on the air. Mission Accomplishers, Saturdays at 7 p.m. on AM 950.
Hi there, this is Alan Miller speaking, the local and studio curmudgeon. You're listening to, and wisely so, Minnesota Progressive Repartee.
Welcome back to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. Well, we're more than midway through 2019, and that means we're almost to a new decade. And what's significant about entering a new decade? That means a new census is going to be conducted by the federal government. And that, of course, means we're going to have new congressional districts at the federal level and new legislative districts at the state and local level. Joining us to talk about the importance of the census and also redistricting and partisan gerrymandering is Sam Berger. He's the Vice President of Democracy and Government Reform at the Center for American Progress. Hey, Sam, thanks so much for joining us on the program today.
Well, thanks so much for having me and for taking the time to talk about these incredibly important issues.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, they're very underrated during the 2020 presidential campaign, at least in my mind so far. But we'll get into that a little bit later on here in the interview. But first up, I got to ask, what exactly is this citizenship question that the Trump administration is pushing to have in the 2020 census?
So the idea here is this is actually part of a broader effort that we've seen from conservatives over the last few years to make what we would call structural changes or procedural changes, changes to the way in which you count up the votes, draw the districts, et cetera, that are sort of more in the nitty-gritty, not things that people focus on as much, but can have, you know, very large impacts. And so what we have here is, at least what has been revealed, an effort by conservative activists to try and decrease representation for communities of color and for Democrats by lowering census count numbers. The idea here being that if you put in a citizenship question, it will discourage certain folks from filling out the census, which will impact the ultimate numbers and skew things in Republicans' favor. And why do I say that was the overarching plan? Well, in fact, they found evidence of this. A conservative activist who was sort of one of the godfathers of Republican redistricting efforts passed away, and his daughter found this information when she was going through his things and shared it with others, with groups focused on redistricting, that basically show him doing a report concluding that's the point of adding a citizenship question. And then we know from what's come out in the court case, that the Trump administration itself repeatedly lied about why it was trying to add the citizenship question. They claimed that it was a request from the Department of Justice to improve enforcement of the Voting Rights Act, which, you know, is laughable on its face given the ways in which conservatives have attacked the Voting Rights Act for years, and in particular this administration's lack of concern for those sorts of issues. But also, we found out that, in fact, Wilbur Ross at the Department of Commerce asked for it first. He wanted to do this, and then he basically asked DOJ to ask him. So we have this situation where this is an elaborate, complicated effort to, at its core, reduce representation for communities of color and thereby try and reduce representation of the Democratic Party at the national level.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but going back to the Supreme Court ruling on this idea of the citizenship question, it was that essentially they said you don't really have a very good reason for putting this on here. And once again, it seems like over the past week, we've had another different reason for why the Trump administration wants this on here. It seems like they have many different reasons and not really a consistent justification for having the question on.
Yeah, I think it's even worse than that. I mean, what the Supreme Court basically said was, look, this is so obviously false that we can't support an agency action based on this determination. Like your claim, we just cannot support it. And remember, you know, this is the deciding vote here is Chief Justice Roberts, and what I think he was, who was Republican appointed justice. And I think what he was basically saying is, look, I can't go along with this. This is such a transparent farce. I cannot support this. You keep saying these things, and the record before me proves that you're lying. And so agencies can't make up fake reasons to move forward with actions. They have to disclose their true reasons, and you haven't done that. It's a pretty incredible thing for a conservative justice to say about a conservative administration. But the record itself is incredible. I mean, the extent to which the Trump administration is lying, I know your listeners probably won't find that shocking, but lying in the context of a court case, this is not the kind of thing that the government ever does. It's not the kind of thing that government lawyers do. And in fact, you see this in the response by government lawyers themselves, you know, to Trump's claim that, in fact, they're going to be moving forward. The career attorney basically appeared before a judge and apologized. He said, look, I don't know what's going on. I've always, you know, I'm a 16-year veteran of the Department of Justice. I told you what I thought to be the truth. I can't explain to you what the president is talking about in his tweet. And I think that also is reflected in the fact that they have now removed the team that was originally working on the census case and put in a new team, presumably because they're doing something that they couldn't get career lawyers to sign off on because it's such an egregious legal argument, or B, they recognize that the credibility of the current lawyers are shot because they basically went into court and claimed a bunch of things, and now the administration is saying, oh, no, that was never right.
Is there a chance that the citizenship question could still be put on the census because, let's say, they go back to the Supreme Court and have what they think is a justifiable reason and the court agrees? Could it get on in that way? Of course, we've also heard thoughts from Donald Trump saying he might use executive action. Is there any hope it could still get on, or I shouldn't really say hope, is there any chance it still could get on the actual census?
Well, I think in a normal world, with a normal administration and a normal court, I would say no. You know, we're past the point, and it's what the Supreme Court said, what the decision said was you have to tell us your real reason. Their response is, okay, we'll see if we can make up a new real reason. Like, that on its face should mean that it can't go forward. But, you know, this is part of the reason that conservatives have been working so hard to pack the court, so that they have a chance to move forward with specious legal arguments, obtain policy goals basically through the judiciary. So I don't want to count anything out, but I think on its face, given what we understand about the timing, given Robert's opinion, it seems very unlikely that they would be able to get this added. But I hesitate to make any sorts of promises given this administration and given what's been an exceedingly partisan court.
So I want to go back to a point you made just a few minutes ago, and that's these files that were released by the daughter of Thomas Hoeffler, who you were saying was that Republican operative who's been instrumental in gerrymandering and voter suppression. Do you think there's any hesitancy on the part of Republicans and even the Trump administration of even bringing this back to the court in fear that more of these files could actually be put into the public record? Because at least what we've seen so far, these are pretty damaging, well, things that have been in that we found so far in these files from Hoeffler.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think that in a normal administration, you would sort of cut your losses and move on. I don't think that Donald Trump has carefully reviewed the facts at hand and made a reasoned determination based on that the juice is worth the squeeze, so to speak, you know, that it's worth taking the risk that more information gets into the record. I think, you know, he sort of just randomly tweeted in the way that he randomly does a whole host of things. And now the apparatus of government is being forced to kind of apply rationality on the back end to what was an irrational act. I mean, that's a big part of what the Trump administration is a lot of folks spending a lot of time trying to make believe that the emperor has clothes. And I think that that's partially what's happening here. I'm sure that there was a careful weighing that took place before, but I think that was all thrown out of the door when Trump had his tweet. And you've sort of seen that in this desperate effort by DOJ to contrive some sort of rationale to back up what Trump said.
One of the political arguments we've heard in favor of having the citizenship question is the fact that, well, back in 1950, it was on the census, but as you can probably explain, the question in 1950 was much different than what we had in 2020, same with the justifications for having that back in 1950. And of course, it was later removed as well. Can you talk us through some of the history of having the citizenship question on the census?
Well, I think the most important thing to recognize here in general is that there's an elaborate process that goes into adding any type of question to the census, in part because the impacts of various wordings, of placement of all of these things can be quite significant. So there's normally a very lengthy process that one goes through that's driven by experts at the census, elsewhere throughout government, about these sorts of questions and about the likely impact that will have. That wasn't what was followed here. This didn't go through any sort of normal process. This was added on an ad hoc basis, and now we've subsequently found out why, because of the perceived impact that would have, the advantage that it was intended to have for Republicans. So, and the census itself has been quite clear that the use of this question would have this kind of impact. The exact extent of it is not known. These are all estimates, but it would potentially be quite significant in recent studies have suggested it might be even more significant than originally assumed. So this is one of those things where the established process has been thrown out the window in an effort to seize political power, and it's something we're seeing not just here. I mean, this is what's going on in the instances of gerrymandering, which you alluded to at the beginning of this program. You know, this is an effort to rewrite the rules to basically limit the impact of voters to have their will expressed through our democratic processes, and we're seeing these attacks on democracy from a whole host of areas, and all with the same purpose, which is to consolidate conservative power in the absence of support for conservative policies.
You're listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. Up next, we're going to play part two of our interview with Sam Berger, as we're going to touch more on partisan gerrymandering. That's on the way next.
Hello, this is Brett's grandmother. You are listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee.
Turn to Auto Technical with your vehicle donation. We have families waiting for a car. You know, over 85% of unemployed are successful in finding and keeping a job if they have dependable transportation. A car plus a job equals a life changed. 612-919-5526. We have families waiting for a car. 919-5526 or autotech.org.
Hi, this is Paul Metza inviting you to listen to a great show with a great story about my friend Scott Sansby's dog who got stolen in Los Angeles and what he had to do to get it back. We're going to interview Scott about that story and his great music career as a drummer. The show airs this Saturday at 6 p.m. and Sunday at 4 p.m. on AM 950.
At Better Futures Minnesota, we transform the lives of men and support Minnesota's environment by working towards zero waste. Our approach reaffirms each man's dignity and supports self-sufficiency. Better Futures Minnesota is a work training model. Through our reuse, retail warehouse, and supervised work crews with specialized in residential and commercial building deconstruction, property maintenance, appliance recycling, and janitorial services, we demonstrate ways to employ hard-to-employ men on a pathway to independence. Hire our work crews at BetterFuturesMinnesota.com.
Hi, this is Ken Hagland, host of Living Healthy and Aging Well, inviting you to listen to our new show airing on Saturdays from noon to 1, where we talk about your health and your life and provide insights to living and aging well. Each week, we provide answers to important questions regarding health care, elder care, end-of-life care, and caregiver support to help you and your loved ones plan for the future and enjoy your highest quality of life today. Please join us every Saturday from noon to 1 for Living Healthy and Aging Well.
What kind of a jackass would let an animal pick their insurance? Did you really think a lizard could save you money on car insurance? Would you let a duck pick your health policy? Insurance can be a zoo, but this is ridiculous. What you really need is an insurance agent that isn't looking out for the insurance companies. You need Cheryl at Array, an independent agent with 30 years experience looking for the best rate possible. Quit monkeying around and call 763-504-3067. That's 763-504-3067 for Cheryl at Array, representing you, not the insurance companies.
I'm Connie Burek, co-host of Awakened Living Infusion radio show. Join Michelle Kitzmiller and I as we focus on all aspects of health, wellness, spirituality, and growth from a mind, body, spirit, emotion perspective. On the Awakened Living radio show, we will discuss stress, self-care, fear, happiness, beliefs, communication, joy, pain, trauma, and more. Join us for the Awakened Living Infusion radio show Saturdays at 10 a.m. Let us share with you ways to infuse vitality into life.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Brett Johnson. Look for sunny skies today with a high near 85. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low around 68. Tuesday, rain with a high near 81. And Wednesday, sunny with a high around 77.
Crooner's Lounge and Supper Club is one of the most beautiful fine dining restaurants in the Twin Cities. You get the full dinner club experience with delicious food and great live music. Plus, check out their happy hour and food and drink specials, plus their Sunday brunch. Crooner's Lounge and Supper Club is located on Moore Lake and Highway 65. Details at eatlocalminnesota.com.
Hey, this is Rick Shiomi from Full Circle Theater Company, and I hope you can join us for Repartee. That's the Minnesota Progressive Repartee.
And welcome back to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. Here's part two of our interview with Sam Berger of the Center for American Progress talking about partisan gerrymandering and what's going to happen after 2020. Let's move on to that issue you just talked about a second ago, and that is gerrymandering, because if we do end up with that citizenship question, we, of course, will have even more extreme gerrymandering than we have already, which happened after the 2010 census and then those midterm elections during the Obama administration. So, recently, the Supreme Court largely ruled that partisan gerrymandering is an issue for state courts and not for the Supreme Court. Is that kind of a good summary of what actually happened this past June?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think basically the Supreme Court said that they weren't going to get involved in the issue of partisan gerrymandering, which basically means that in the absence of legislative action and potentially some state action, not much is going to happen in the world of gerrymandering. I mean, obviously, in the case of an individual state, the legislature isn't going to take action because it's the legislature that did the gerrymandering, right? That, generally speaking, is how it's set up. And so this is sort of this odd determination where a court that is so eager to hop in and correct Congress, to correct agencies, you know, when they're trying to regulate things like health and safety, suddenly decides when it comes to gerrymandering, I don't know, who's to say? Maybe it's okay that, you know, 40% of people vote for Republicans, but they get 60% of the seats. There's no, you know, throw up our hands. There's no test. There's no way to figure it out. And the backdrop that people need to recognize is that, you know, while both parties engage in gerrymandering, looking at it nationwide, it's a huge advantage for the Republican Party. It's a huge advantage for conservatives, who've picked up, you know, 15 plus seats on average from 2012 to the 2016 elections, 19 actually on average between 2012 and 2016. Have also been able to significantly gerrymander state legislatures as well. So, you know, against that backdrop, a determination that courts can't figure this out, this is one of those things that just, who's to say if it's gerrymandered or not, seems odd, and obviously is in line with a court that generally seems comfortable with conservative attacks on our democratic system, our democratic processes.
So what's going to be interesting in the case of gerrymandering after 2020 is a state just to the east of us over in Wisconsin, which of course is one of the most gerrymandered states in the country. Mm-hmm. But what's an interesting case over there is that they have Democratic Governor Tony Evers, who is guaranteed to be in office after those 2020 elections when they do redistricting. Likely he's going to disagree with what will probably be a Republican-controlled state legislature, which of course would mean, and correct me if I'm wrong, that these maps would go to the state Supreme Court, and I assume this would happen in other states as well, where you would have divided government compared to after 2010 when they may have had unified Republican control. What's likely to happen if these go to state Supreme Courts? Are they likely to reaffirm gerrymandered maps, or will they largely want to stay out of this and go with nonpartisan maps? What do you think is likely to happen in a state like Wisconsin, where you will have divided government after 2020?
Well, I think in the cases in which something goes to the court, it's going to depend a lot on the makeup of the court itself, right? I mean, I think that this is part of the reason that you've seen this effort by conservatives to try and take control of the judiciary, both at the state and the federal level. And when I say take control, I mean through a variety of mechanisms. One, spending an incredible amount of money, you know, where there are judicial elections, pouring money into it. In the case of the Supreme Court, significant dark money from secret donors that's going into support nominees like Gorsuch and Kavanaugh. Second, efforts to put in the most conservative possible judges that they can get in, and of course at the federal level you see an effort to put in particularly young judges. And the reason that these steps are being taken is so that, you know, when things around gerrymandering, other sorts of structural democratic reforms, places in which Republicans are seeking to skew the rules, when those go to court, they can win. They can have the court back them up and say this is fine. And so a lot of this will depend on the makeups of those courts, in places where you have a fair court, you know, that's looking at the law. You know, you imagine that they'll try and strike down some of these gerrymanders, assuming that under the state constitution there's a basis for doing so. In areas where you have conservative control of the court, they're much more likely to sign off on whatever it is that the legislature might do. So, you know, I think that this gets back to the underlying point about, you know, when you're sort of seeking to control the process rather than win within the rules of the process, or when you're seeking to rewrite the rules in your favor rather than fight with the or advance your cause within those rules, it's a serious issue. It causes serious legitimacy issues, and I think we're seeing this attack on democracy coming from a lot of different angles.
How do you think Democrats will respond after 2020, since they've become much more aware of this issue, especially after the 2010 elections, because we see states like California and Illinois, which have unified control for Democrats, even our state locally here in Minnesota, a very good chance that could become a Democratic trifecta if the state Senate flips to the DFL control. Are Democrats largely going to go with a fight fire with fire campaign against this, against partisan gerrymandering, being that the courts largely said this is a local and a state issue? What sorts of ways are people trying to fight back against partisan gerrymandering?
Well, I think the biggest thing is at the federal level, the Democratic Party has made clear that trying to unskew these rules is a priority, first order priority. You know, it's something you saw with H.R. 1, a bill that passed, an anti-corruption pro-democracy bill that passed the House, with every Democrat voting for it, has support of every Democrat in the Senate. This is a bill that would address a lot of important issues, anti-corruption, money in politics, expanding voting, but it also has a provision that would outlaw gerrymanders. At the federal level, it's clear that Democrats are in favor of basically an even playing field, that they're comfortable that if everyone's vote counts, if the districts are drawn fairly, if moneyed special interests can't influence the outcome, you know, they'll let the chips fall where they may. And so I think, and I'm hopeful that if you see at the federal level Democratic control, that they'll take action swiftly to try and implement these far-reaching policies to unskew the system, to make it fair. I think that at the local level, at the state level, you've already seen efforts by trifecta states in which Democrats control both houses of the legislature as well as the governor's office, to implement things like voting reforms, campaign finance reforms, things of that nature. And so, you know, I think that it's important for the Democratic Party to stand with democracy. It's important for the Democratic Party to fight for fair rules. It's important for the Democratic Party, really for everybody, to want to have a system in which folks need to be responsive to the people. right? If you are putting forward a set of policies and the American people don't support it, you should try and change your policies or convince people. But you shouldn't try and change the rules so that people's votes don't count, so that you disempower those who don't support your policies. And so, you know, I think that the Democratic Party, the broader progressive movement, has been pretty clear that it's going to be a pro-democracy party, and that they're going to let the chips fall where they may, and I think that that's the right approach.
All right, Sam, one final question for you before I let you go. And with the 2020 Democratic primary in full swing, do you think candidates and the debates we've seen so far have put enough focus on democracy reform and government reform? I mean, going back to the debates, I don't think we had any direct questions from the moderators, but we did see some of the candidates bring up this idea of trying to fight back against voter suppression and having government reform and making sure everyone is able to vote. Do you think this has been enough of a focus so far in the 2020 campaign?
So it's interesting. I think from a candidate perspective, there's been a lot of focus on it. In fact, I think what you're seeing is a healthy competition between 2020 candidates to see who can put forward the best ideas to fix our system. It's because they recognize that, people have heard a lot about how, candidates come through with proposals to do things like lower prescription drug prices or raise wages or address climate change. But if we don't address our broken system first, if we don't limit the power of special interests, if we don't expand access to the vote, if we don't put power back with the people, we're not going to be able to make those changes. And so voters are demanding that folks put forward a plan for how they're going to protect not just protect, but strengthen our democracy. And I think candidates are responding. You saw Elizabeth Warren, actually, the first question in the first debate, talk about the importance of anti-corruption, talk about the importance of protecting our democracy. You've seen bold plans come from representatives, or from candidates like Senator Gillibrand, from Beto O'Rourke, from Senator Bennett. You've seen Mayor Pete say that HR1, like reforms, would be the first thing that his administration would do. You've seen other candidates like Bernie Sanders, others talk about the importance of limiting the influence of money in politics. So you've seen a number of candidates talking about it. I think there could always be more. I think what we haven't seen as much of attention is from sort of the political intelligentsia, the political class. You know, none of the moderators raised this issue. I think that the candidates were primed to talk about it, but I don't think that the moderators yet realize just how important this is, just how defining this is in the debate. So I think this is actually something, as this carries on, as you see more and more candidates putting out their pro-democracy platforms, as you see them pushing this as a way to unlock the potential to really make the transformative changes that we need in this country, I'm hoping that's going to bubble up some to reporters, to commentators and the like, and that they're going to realize that one of the big things this race is going to be about is who has the best plans to strengthen our democracy, to fix our broken system, because we know it's broken. And so, you know, if people are going to do, if the next president's going to do anything, first they're going to have to fix the current system so that it works for all Americans.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, because even if you win in 2020, if the deck is still stacked against you when it comes to midterms or your reelection campaign, really not a whole lot you can do legislatively to get things done. Mm-hmm. Hey, that's Sam Berger. He is the Vice President for Democracy and Government Reform for the Center for American Progress. Hey, Sam, thanks so much for taking some time to join us today.
Thanks so much for having me, and thanks again for taking the time to talk about this incredibly critical issue.
And coming up next on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee, we're going to play back an interview that Ellie Krug conducted just this morning with Reverend Dan Collison of First Covenant Church in Minneapolis. You may have seen Reverend Collison and the church in the news recently as they were defrocked by the Evangelical Covenant Church due to their stances on LGBTQ rights. That's coming up next on the Repartee.
Hi, this is Chad Larson, owner of AM950. You are listening to Minnesota Progressive Repartee.
What kind of a jackass would let an animal pick their insurance? Did you really think a lizard could save you money on car insurance? Would you let a duck pick your health policy? Insurance can be a zoo, but this is ridiculous. What you really need is an insurance agent that isn't looking out for the insurance companies. You need Cheryl at Array, an independent agent with 30 years experience looking for the best rate possible. Quit monkeying around and call 763-504-3067. That's 763-504-3067 for Cheryl at Array, representing you, not the insurance companies.
Hi, this is Paul Metz. Do you love dogs as much as I do? Then come on out to Blackie's Memorial Woofin' Annie on Sunday, July 14th from 1 to 4 at Moe's Bar and Restaurant in Moundsview. I put together a great afternoon of music, including Martin Devaney, Doug Collins, Sherilyn Linton, myself, and more, playing for the dogs. It's a benefit for Homeward Bound Dog Rescue. We are going to have great silent auction, doggy-centric things available to bid on this Sunday, July 14th, 1 to 4 p.m. at Moe's Bar and Restaurant in Moundsview.
Chances are, after spring cleaning, you missed a spot. A couple really big spots, like your roof and siding. Run your fingers across your siding. You'll likely get a gross residue. And your roof probably has some black streaks, too. Your roof and siding aren't always easy to clean, but they're definitely the most visible parts of your home that give it its curb appeal. So let Blue Sky Services clean your roof and siding. Blue Sky's safe soft wash method won't cause any damages and will make your home look like new. Right now, Blue Sky Services is running their summer special where you can get your whole house, roof, and siding cleaned starting at only $447. That's the most viewed parts of your home cleaned for only $447. Then mention AM950 when you call Blue Sky Services to get an additional $50 off. So get the curb appeal back on your home and call Blue Sky Services at 952-467-2447. That's 952-467-2447.
I'm Candy Broffel, publisher of the Twin Cities edition of Natural Awakenings magazine and host of Green Tea Conversations, a new show for people who are on a journey to take responsibility for their health and play a more active role in their family's well-being. Join me every Sunday at 10 a.m. as I interview local experts who share the latest in natural holistic approaches in a fun and informative way. So grab a cup of tea and join the conversation as we awaken to natural health. Visit us at naturaltwincities.com.
At Burger Mo's, Mondays no longer need to be a drag. Dine on the beautiful patio for Burger Monday Madness every Monday after 4 p.m., where you can order any burger and fries off menu for just $6. Not valid on Excel event evenings. Burger Mo's offers 20 fresh, never-frozen burger varieties, as well as delicious appetizers, soups, salads, and unburgers, dogs, paninis, shakes, and desserts. Located at 242 West 7th Street in St. Paul, with plenty of free parking, and online at burgermo's.com.
Tune in for Philosophy Talk, the program that questions everything.
Except your intelligence.
Coming up, our annual summer misreading show.
Wait, Ken, start over. I think you misread your line.
No, I'm thinking about recent fiction that goes right over people's heads.
Oh, you mean movies with morally complicated characters, like Three Billboards.
Or TV shows like Game of Thrones.
Yeah, there's a bunch of sophisticated fiction out there, and we need to rethink how we read.
It's a summer misreading special. Next time on Philosophy Talk.
Philosophy Talk, every Sunday at 8 a.m. and again at 2 p.m. on AM 950.
This is Gary from Minneapolis on the Rapids here, Minnesota's progressive grassroots station fighting the privileged few.
Welcome back to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. We're now going to play back an interview that Ellie Krug conducted this morning with Reverend Dan Collison of First Covenant Church in Minneapolis. He and his church were recently defrocked by the Evangelical Covenant Church due to their stances on LGBTQ rights. What you'll hear is part one of Ellie Krug's interview with Reverend Collison. You can hear the entire interview coming up on Ellie 2.0 Radio next Monday at 7 a.m.
So, you got to love the Jesuits, as I said. You just have to love them. And I am so impressed with what's happening in Indiana, in Indianapolis. But now for the big interview, I'm exceedingly even more impressed with the guests that we have here. Let me just do a very quick interview, or excuse me, preview of Reverend Dan Collison. So Reverend Dan Collison is the lead pastor at First Covenant Church in Minneapolis. He is also the director of the Downtown Partnerships for Minneapolis Downtown, the Minneapolis Downtown Council, and he's the executive director of the East Town Business Partnership and New Lope Partners. Reverend Dan, you're on the line. Is that right?
I'm here and really pleased to be a part of your program, Ellie. Thank you for inviting me on.
Well, thank you. And, you know, I've been keeping, you and I have met each other in the course of actually nothing to do with religion. But in terms of your business outreach for the Elliott Park neighborhood where we both live, or at least where your church is located and where I live. And I have been following what's going on. So let's at least quickly get the audience up to date on what's happening. You are, as I said, the pastor, the lead pastor of First Covenant Church, and you have had an ongoing dispute with your church leadership about your support of LGBTQ people. Do I have that right?
That's correct.
Okay.
And if I was to sort of just quickly frame the larger narrative, I was called to be the pastor of First Covenant Church, Minneapolis, in 2009. And when invited in, the church was at the verge of bankruptcy. It had declined for 50 years. There was $500,000 annual deficit. The average age was in the mid-80s.
You're talking about your particular parish, your physical building.
Correct.
Okay.
The First Covenant Church of Minneapolis.
Okay.
Our church was a historic church that was a part of a handful that formed this larger denomination called the Evangelical Covenant Church. First Covenant Church has 145th birthday this coming fall. The Evangelical Covenant Church is 134 years. And, you know, our church was one of the largest for the first 100 years of the history of the denomination. And then, as with a lot of downtown and urban center churches, it just experienced a lot of decline. But I was called to revitalize. I was called to redevelop. And, you know, we leaned into the downtown in terms of, like, needing to be available to everyone who was there and to the themes and issues that were important to the community. Part of why I work in the business community now is because I first started volunteering for the local business association, and they said, help us work on homelessness. So then the church opened a shelter for those facing homelessness.
Yep.
Help us find more affordable housing. So we worked for 7 years, and now we're building a $42 million affordable housing project. And all of those have arts. Can we have an arts group? So we have a non-religious arts group. And
Hold on a second. I just want to make sure that our listeners understand where your church is, because if you go... is it up 7th Street by U.S. Bank Stadium?
In between U.S. Bank Stadium and Hennepin Healthcare Hospital on 7th and Chicago.
Yep.
There used to be a restaurant called Hubert's, was the only sort of marker over there. It's now Eric the Red. There's been all this redevelopment. But yeah, we're right between U.S. Bank Stadium and the hospital.
And that's where that construction is going. There's a huge hole in the ground. And
yeah.
And what are they building there for you?
169 units of affordable housing, so tax credit, subsidized housing for people who earn 50 to 60% of area median income. Applications are going to be received by the developer in August, very soon. We're going to do grand opening in May of 2020.
Okay,
very exciting project.
All right, so this is something that you helped envision and help bring to the table as part of revitalizing your congregation, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Now, and part of how the church revitalized was that we actually now have 8, sometimes 9 partnerships in our building who share space, who run programs around this integrating motif of the healing block.
Okay, so I'm going to just interject here a word, a name, okay? Jesus.
Yeah, yeah.
This would be the Jesus would be pretty much pro for. Do I have that right?
Yeah, absolutely, in so many ways. I mean, in terms of solidarity with those who face marginalization, those who are reaching for more holistic lives, and also for this sense of we're together. We all represent community across our differences. And where our church got sideways with our denomination, or at least some parts of our denomination, was that as we opened up all these conversations, well, how do we work on poverty? How do we work on those who face mental illness? How do we work on race, which is this painful but important conversation? How about gender equality? Well, right away, when we started in 2009 with this redevelopment, including the LGBTQ community was really important. I mean, it was actually, I would argue, number one, or in the top 10 always, in terms of, well, can we participate? And as the laws began to change in the city and the state of Minnesota, our church was redeveloping, the majority of people who participated and who came and were drawn into this revitalization wanted equality as a hallmark. As I began then experiencing and leading in some of that push toward equality, I quickly learned that by majority, the denomination did not favor it. And there were some people of course, in our church who struggle with it some. The denominational leaders and local denominational leaders initially signaled that this was not really something they wanted to do or something they wanted to talk about. That
you
was
mean
a tough situation
about,
for me.
About being more open to LGBTQ people.
Right. And, okay. And the real nodding point came, there were two or three things that happened. One, I went to my local leader, my regional leader, and said, we need to talk about this. We need to press in. We need to create more space. And he just said, no, we actually aren't going to even have conversations, because when people begin to have conversations, that's when they change their minds.
Unbelievable.
And I thought, now we're going to probably have some difficulties here.
Unbelievable. I'm not even going to talk about it, because I don't want to run the risk that you're going to change my closed mind about LGBTQ people.
Yeah, that was very difficult. Then when we had a young couple came out, a gay couple, they wanted to get married. We found a way to support them with a non-ordained person and doing the wedding off-site, but we supported them and included them. That's when things really began to heat up with our struggle with denominational leaders. And then a really interesting set of things happened. There were a lot of national folks in the Evangelical Covenant Church who had been wanting to hear more inclusion and more inclusion conversations take place. And me, like them, were lamenting that every time there would be, eventually there were dialogues, by the way, because after we supported the gay wedding, after we started having gay members in our church and gay members on our staff, then it became more of a national conversation. But every time they had a conversation, they would only hand the microphone to people who agreed with their previously discerned position, which ultimately was another point of tension. This denomination has sort of prided itself in being able to disagree on positions, but yet staying together. And so we just were asking for permission to disagree and then to provide our local discernment of care for the LGBTQ community and our members of our community. And as time went on, over a five-year period of time, it just sort of intensified, where we kept on saying, our history, the way we look at things, just let us disagree. And then those who were elected most recently and people in power chose to make this the one defining statement. Like, we can disagree on anything. Virtually anything. We can disagree on almost anything, but this is the thing they're saying we can no longer disagree. And that, of course, was a grievance of ours and of a minority of the denomination. And that's why ultimately I was put on trial and the church was put on trial and we were both kicked out 10 days ago.
Okay, well, and we're going to get back to that in a second. We need to take a break right now. And when we come back, I want to hear about getting kicked out. I hate that happened. And I want to talk about you, Reverend Dan Collison, the idealist. So listeners, we're going to take a break right now. When we come back, we'll talk to Reverend Dan. You're listening to me, Ellie Krug, on AM 950. And we will be back in a second. Thanks.
Again, that was Ellie Krug speaking with Reverend Dan Collison of First Covenant Church in Minneapolis. You can hear the rest of that interview coming up on Ellie 2.0 Radio next Monday at 7 a.m. here on AM 950. That's all the time we have for today on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. Thanks for tuning in.
You've been listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. This is the end of our program, or the Departee. You can listen to our show anytime at AM950radio.com or wherever you get your podcasts.